and I treated it like work, because that I can do. I can manage a project. I can follow through on tasks and activities. It wasn't natural. I'm not a natural extrovert. I'm not the person running to the cocktail party. But I can very methodically sit down and ask those questions, be curious, understand what they do, understand how I can help. But for me, it was about being very methodical in that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a core part of it, becoming aware and then setting out to actually develop those skills. So Marissa, I just had a question for you, and you know, relationship skills and building relationships is so critical to your job, right? And I think often we get confused between building relationships and then leveraging them. So how do you actually use those relationships to help you advance? And this is the bit, at least in the research, where I think sometimes we get a little bit unstuck. So I wondered if you could share with everybody, you know, how do you build and then how do you leverage those relationships to advance?
Sure. So it's funny, I have a lot of similarities with your description of being more introverted than people would assume. And so I have intentionally worked on relationship building. I'm not inherently good at it. In fact, I think I spent the first 20 years of my career just heads down working through lunch, and people misunderstood what that was. It really wasn't until the last maybe 5 to 8 years that I put an intentional strategy around relationship development. And I put, I have three categories of relationships around work that may be helpful for you all, because I intentionally work on each of the three categories. The first one is mentors. And that's pretty easy to understand, although I really think it's important to think about mentors not only inside the workspace, the workplace, but outside, because the influence outside can actually be very influential as you navigate your career out and about beyond your current position. The second one is allies in the workspace. There's an intentional set of people that I focus on that I'm trying to align with in the organization, that I know will have my back if I'm not in the room, that are aligned to my goals, my values, my ethics, my strategies, my team, and will support my organization. The third group is influencers. This one's the most important, and I didn't necessarily identify this until a little bit later in my career. These are people that are not necessarily allies and not necessarily on your side, but they're thought leaders of the company, and they're actually influencing decisions on a regular basis. They may not be on the executive team, is the really interesting thing that I've started to learn, but they're very influential in decision making around people, around ethics, around culture, around strategies. And so it's very important to spend some time, take a step back and listen more. Watch the room. Watch who's influencing conversation. And then think about how you build relationships. I'm not saying be an authentic version of yourself. It's very important that I make that clear. But I would encourage you all to recognize those influencers and figure out a way to engage with them in a way that's helpful for you and your strategy and your goals for what you're trying to do for you and your organization. And so I think as I've built my career, I've actually intentionally looked at each of those three groups, and I've built a series of teams around that and goals around that. I've identified that there are two or three influencers that are not well connected and aligned to me. What am I going to do about that this week? What am I going to do to change that? How am I going to build that relationship? And a lot of that relationship is about getting to know these people deeply. It's not about a 30-minute meeting. It's about coffee outside of the office to really get to know the context of where they're coming from. If you have an issue with someone, I always find if you get a little bit more context around what's driving them and their behavior and their mood, it softens the conversation immediately. It takes the edge away completely. But you have to put yourself out there. You have to be a little vulnerable, and you have to open that human up to be vulnerable too. So I would come back to those three groups and being intentional about those three, mm-hmm. and really making the effort to get to know sort of what's inside, not just the perception in the room and the behavior in the room.
The interesting thing about that is the amount of time this takes.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, at work, so I think all of us are introverts on this panel. I know you wouldn't believe I'm an introvert, but I actually am. And so I spend an enormous amount of time researching and working at my desk. And my job is actually partnerships. So, you know, as everything you said there requires time.
Yeah.
And so I think for the introverts in the room or people who are new to this, actually thinking about where you're spending your time in terms of those three things is incredibly helpful. So if you're looking back at your week, just map out, start to take note of where you're spending your time, and you'll notice whether if it's 60%, that's just on the technical outputs doing that. You know, you want to try and get that ratio quite balanced, irrespective of your role, because the skills are needed regardless of role. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just allocation of time is a really good way to audit yourself to see where am I spending my time. Excellent. So China, you touched on the importance of connectedness versus protectedness. I wondered if all the women in the room who've experienced invisible barriers, if you could talk a little bit about your own experience with that and just strategies you've used to overcome invisible barriers.
Yeah, so when as I said, when you talk about being connected, that's about network, and we use the network word a lot. You need to have a network. It needs to be deep or broad or whatever the case may be, and depending on your culture, networking may be super highly valued as it is in mine, or in other cultures maybe a little bit less because they're hierarchical. It just depends. But what I would say to you is it is the quality of the network that matters. It doesn't have to be big. And oh, by the way, there are things that will happen along your career path that will actually cause you to reevaluate the network you have. So I'll give you an example. I was in one of my prior roles, and I thought I was doing everything that was not only expected, but I thought it was on strategy. I thought I could articulate it in a way that made total sense, and it sort of supported its own value proposition. Fast forward to the evaluation period that comes to all of us annually, biannually, whatever your particular cycle is. And I suddenly was told I wasn't on strategy. And I said, well, how can that be? I've done da-dot, 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 da-dot. All those things are on strategy. They're totally connected. And they totally are representative. And it was, well, here's the problem. Nobody knew that that's exactly what you were doing. I'm going, well, how can that be? I wasn't doing it alone. I wasn't there by myself, right? And I thought, well, that's odd. And so what was most fascinating to me was what I realized from a network perspective is while there were people who understood what I was doing, those people didn't necessarily have a vested interest in the fact I was doing it. So when that conversation came up about, gee, what is China doing? Why is China doing it that way? The room was quiet because while they understood it, it wasn't part of their value proposition. Mm-hmm. And so that caused me to take a step back from a network perspective and go, okay, time to reset, right? What then, who's not in my network, who should be, to your earlier point. But then the question was, and for those who are, maybe I need to reestablish a different set of connections with them, a different kind of conversation. Because here's the funny thing about networks and being connected versus protected. People actually want to help. Usually the problem is we haven't told them what we want them to help us with. So it's great to walk in and say, gee, I'd be interested in knowing what you do or how you do it or how you, you know, reach this position. But if you leave the room without saying what you want or what you need, even if they were willing to help, they have no idea how. And that knowing how is what moves you into the protected category. That moves you into the, when Marissa's not in the room, but the conversation comes up, somebody can actually articulate on your behalf because they actually understand it. That does mean resetting, and to your point, exposing yourself. Now, I will say to you, and particularly for those of you of color in this room, that has an added complexity. Let's not pretend it's not there. It is, and it's real. Mm-hmm. But what I will also tell you is that you have to take into that conversation as you are building those relationships the notion that it is different, but it isn't really. And at the end of the day, an ask for help to achieve something. Everybody wants to be on the winning team. So if people believe you have the skill and capacity to achieve what you're talking about, they're willing to help. And you will have to quiet that cultural voice that says, I don't expose myself here because I'll get judged. It is the tape that runs in the back of some folks' head, depending on where and how you were raised and in what era and which decade. Those messages are louder or quieter, depending. But what you have to do is recognize that tape, you just have to figure out how to turn it off or at least dial it down and make the ask anyway, because that's how you get the help. That's how the relationship becomes real. That then is how you get folks in a room who are willing to pound a table for your next opportunity.
China, that's such a fantastic point, and something that I find super frustrating, particularly at events like this. I get people coming up to me and they'll just give me their card and then walk off. And I'm never quite sure what to do. And so I think the value of actually asking, you know, it's the person who says to me, I'd like an internship or I'd like to share a product with you that I think would be interested to you and women, something like that. I know what to do with it. But when I just get a bunch of cards, they do end up in the bin. I just need to say that. So, yeah, I think it's really powerful asking for what you want. So, Janice, I've got a question for you around, we touched on it earlier, managing your internal organization, but then also your external network. And I think particularly for women in the room here who, you know, want a long career, that's going to change, right? The nature of organizations are changing. We need to manage both how we're perceived internally, but also externally. And that's a lot. So I wondered if you could talk to any strategies around that.
Absolutely. Again, the pace of change is just phenomenal these days. And one of the big problems a lot of organizations have is they become very internally focused. And if you want to stand out in the organization, make sure you're spending some time looking outside. Look outside, see what's happening in other places. People change companies. If someone leaves your company that you valued and respected, stay in touch. And don't lose sight of it. You know, I have my list of folks that I used to work with that I love and respect. And it's sometimes it's a text, sometimes it's a phone call, but we stay in touch. And the ability to build networks when you're going outside, it doesn't always mean a person. So for example, you might be at this event, you might watch a TED talk, you might be inspired by something. Bring it back into the organization. Use those flashes of external brilliance to help build your network internally and to help the organization do better. And a lot of times when you hear things, especially in big companies, it gets collapsed under its own weight. Wouldn't it be great if we had a program, a policy, we had $10 million, we can bring in outside speakers. You know what? You can do a brown bag lunch. A lot of companies have video conferencing. It's free. You can play a TED Talk. You can tell all of your friends to bring one person. You can bring people that are more senior to you. And if you do this, you will build your network internally. You'll be able to connect internal folks with external ideas, and you will also be able to stay in touch with the people that leave and go on to other firms. I work in a small industry. Every time I go to events, we always know people in common. And you will find that as you go through your career. Sometimes you're just one step away, sometimes you're a couple of steps away. And paying attention to that, making the time, we get busy, but put it on your list. Every month, at least one person, stay in contact with that. And every month, when you learn something fabulous outside, be generous. Share it internally. Bring other people along on that journey with you.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's so relevant given the connection with your brand. So we talked a bit about managing your internal brand. But there's also a piece to that of managing your external brand, right? And how you're perceived. I mean, I don't know if you have any advice on how you do that, like how you're perceived, but I just wondered if you could share.
Well, I have lots of restrictions because I'm a registered principal, so I have to be very careful about my external brand. I've got a hearsay that tells me what I can post. But when I didn't have that, pay attention to your digital footprint. Pay attention to what you say yes to. Pay attention to the events that you go to, the people that you speak with. Things that you are passionate about, be passionate about it publicly. It makes a difference. Mm-hmm. When you make your choices about what you post on social media, think about your brand. Think about how you want people to receive that information. What do they want to care about you? It is public. Now, my parents are big Facebook users, and I am not because of that. And I keep telling my parents, like, it is public. People are going to think you're raving lunatics. It is public. Stop that. But think about your digital footprint as well as you manage your personal brand.
Yeah, that's really, really good advice. Marissa, I just wondered if you could share for us, I touched on political acumen or political skills, social skills. How do you develop those? So what's your advice for how you develop that political awareness?
Yeah, I think one of the tools that I like to pay close attention to is my reputation. And I think we've touched on this a little bit from a brand perspective. I don't think that as women we take enough control of managing and influencing our reputations. And I'll give you an example. I feel like in the first decade of my career, I complained about how I was perceived, right? I was like, well, people misunderstand me. Yes, I have sharp elbows, but I'm just trying to get stuff done. And I didn't necessarily think about what I wanted to stand for and almost the headline. If someone were writing a headline about me and my brand and my reputation and what I wanted to say, and then how could I actually influence that to build relationships and build the career that I was hoping to achieve. So I would encourage you to think about your reputation, and I would encourage you to take a step back and say, what do you want to be known for? For me, I want to be known first as a mother, and I want that to be the first thing anybody knows and associates with me, a caring mother and partner to my husband, but also one that has drive. And a philanthropist, and someone who's motivated to be a part of positive change, and a technology leader. And so if you think about, okay, now I've said the positive of what I want to be, how can I manifest that? And how can I kind of end the week with this belief and assessment and assertion that I've actually contributed towards that reputation? So I think one of the most important things that I would say is be thoughtful of your reputation and don't stand back and assume that it's there without you being able to influence it, because you have a very significant role, whether or not it's through social media, through your influencers, through your networks, through your communications on a daily basis.
Great. Thank you so much. So I believe we're really interested in all your questions and what you all think of this panel, so we're going to open it up now.
First of all, I would just like to thank all of you, and if you'd all join me, a really amazing conversation. So I'm going to go ahead and kick it off. As we were talking before the panel, one of the things we were discussing is you hear these great, wonderful insights from these fantastic women, but sometimes it's hard to understand how do I take that and really take action on it. You all actually gave some really great practical advice. I really appreciate it. But I would ask for each of you, maybe what's the one thing that anyone sitting here could walk out and do today to start moving forward to build their networks?
Build the network. I think all of this stems from the first piece is to stop accepting this idea that women need to be fixed, right? And start to use the skills you already have to navigate workplaces and ultimately to fix them. So I think for all the women in the room, continue your journey of self-development, but do it from a place where you believe you are good enough and you believe you have the strengths you need to succeed. And that means actually doing a strengths-based audit of where you're at, so whether it's networking ability or anything else, have a look at what are your strengths and then build on those. So continue the journey, but do it from a different perspective. I think for the men in the room, I don't know, there's one gentleman over there who's very brave, but for the men in the room, my message is to you to stand up, to speak up for women at work, to champion them, to understand the unique skills that they bring, and to help us on the journey to fix organizations so that they are more fair. So that's my message, really.
So I suspect almost everybody in this room has a PDA device somewhere on your person or in your purse. I would like you to take it out, and I would like you to schedule tea with yourself. And I'm going to tell you what that means: to think, evangelize, and ask. And if you schedule tea with yourself on some periodic basis, then you will not forget your own career, and you will not forget to actually take action to build those relationships. And you can schedule tea with a person, or you can schedule it with yourself. Or guess what? When you walk into a meeting, you can take a cup of tea just to remind you of what you should be doing. So I would say to you, if you do that, however then you manifest it for yourself, it's always in front of you.
I think I would just add the concept of courage, and adding to China's point around having really significantly ask for what you want. Don't just assume that you will be tapped. Ask for what you want. If you want that influential relationship, if you want that mentor, if you want that advice, if you want that job, I can't stress enough that you need to be your own advocate there.
And I would add, be intensely curious. ask questions, meet people, and when you're following your curiosity journey, go up a level. Ask the person above you. Ask the person two levels above you. They have a much better purview of what's going on. Be curious. Ask those folks. They can see the landscape.
Oh, that's fantastic. So if you do have questions, we have a mic over here, and we also have one over here on this side of the audience. So go ahead.
And I really appreciate your talk this morning. I really liked your comment about the speed of trust. I recently found myself protected against budget cuts because I was connected to leadership. So I think those two are related, being protected or connected. But my question is, in terms of the categories of relationships, mentors, allies, and influencers, I really like those categories. So when you think about yourself and your relationship with other people, is it part of your branding to think of yourself as a mentor, an ally, or an influencer? Because we all play those roles at different times. Should we be focusing on one more than the other? Or is that situational?
I love that question, because I approach that I need to play a role in all three of those spaces. And I make an intentional role on scheduling time with people to do all of those. So I actually think that I would give each equal weighting, my two cents.
I'm not a fan of categories, so if I may just say, I mean, I get conceptually that it's helpful, but I think ultimately, whenever you're in that relationship, the bottom line is you're trying to help someone, right? And so you might have all three of those strands in one relationship in terms of what that individual's need is. So I think certainly when you find yourself in a position to give back or help somebody, the goal is really to really understand what their needs are, and even sometimes what they don't know they need. And work to really help that. And that may take all three strands or one particular strand. So I just wanted to share that.
Why don't we go over here?
Hi. My question is, once, let's say you've realized that you need to work on your perception, how do you know that perhaps, like, it's time to leave that, like, whether you're the things you're doing to try to change your perception, whether they're not working out or something about the organization is such that it's time for you to jump ship?
That's a tougher question. And leaving a company, you know, I would really take that piece out of it from leaving a company. If you're working at a growing company with a lot of opportunity that has a fantastic environment, I would say find a way to just grind through it and get better. If you're working in kind of a toxic environment where those around you are miserable and you have to work on things, find an opportunity to go somewhere else. But if you have not built this muscle, your issues will follow you.
Yeah.
So don't lose sight of that, because your issues will follow you.
Yeah. You take you wherever you go, right? And so you have to ask yourself, is what I want to achieve achievable here? If that answer's yes, then you stay and grind it out. If the answer's no, then move on. Mm-hmm. But know that you have to move on to the next thing that you actually want, and you need to be clear about that. Otherwise, you will simply find yourself in the next environment that doesn't fit.
Can I just add, it's really important to listen to organizations. Listen to what the organization's telling you. So my very best friend has currently been told there's no room for her to get promoted at any point now or in the future. That's a message, right? You got to listen to what they're saying.
Yeah.
So my thing is listen to what the organization's telling you or what they're not telling you. And the proof is in the pudding. Like, if you're not getting promoted and you can't see a path to that, that's normally, you know, there's a message in that. So I would listen to the organization.
Which makes it important to ask as well. So we'll move over here.
Hey, I'm Rebecca. What strategies do you have in a situation where women are maybe influential or in influencing positions, and they're also responsible for sort of holding other women back? And I think that's something that happens a lot.
Yeah. We're not always kind to one another?
We want to be, but the reality is that's not always the way it is. And so if you're in a situation where you feel like other women are holding you back from being able to grow, or from being able to encourage you, or to be, I think as you said, someone should be committed to your growth. If that's not happening, what do you do? Especially if they're in influential situations.
So if I could just interrupt, understand if you have to leave the session, but would really appreciate if you could try to keep quiet so that we can continue the conversation. Thank you.
So you have to remember there are many trees in the forest, right? And so while sometimes we want to look for that support in people who look like us, whichever us it is that you've identified with, recognize that's not always the case, in which case you expand the search, right? So it is a rare situation in an organization where one single human being can completely control your destiny. So the thing to do is, if you aren't getting what you need or believing what you should in fact receive, then you simply look for other opportunities in people who frankly may look very different than you, and recognize that they may have some desire and interest to bring you to the table, to bring you along, to support you in that growth and development. And so it's about not limiting where you look, because if you look in the same places for what you're looking for, you're only going to get what you've always gotten, and that's not going to change.
And I would add, if you're brave enough, ask those women, what's the one or two things that you can do differently to improve your effectiveness?
Right.
Because you might find out they're not actively keeping you back, but you've never engaged in the conversation. There's something else going on there.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Take that person out to lunch and figure out what's happening. Get to know them. Have the courage. Get to know them. I've had multiple relationships significantly change when I just got to know that human on a different level.
Hi, Angela. I was wondering on how you navigate office politics and even integrate yourself into them when you work remotely.
Preach! I can answer this one because it's what my PhD's in, and it's also my experience. So I currently live in Houston, but I work in New York. I have to commute to New York. I've lived in Australia, I've lived in the UK, I've lived everywhere, New Zealand, South Africa, I've got a funny accent. So I've lived everywhere, and I've worked remotely most of my career. It's extremely challenging, and the reason I say that is because you've got the double element of office politics. You've got the piece where you have to actively make time to engage remotely, so through Skype or through phone contact, and people on the other end are less willing to do that, right? Because it's easy to say no to somebody for a Skype meeting. It's really hard to say no when they're in the office and you're going to see them and they know you're free, right? So you have to make a real effort to actually put that in the calendar and hold them to it, right? To try and develop the relationship, to update them on what you're working on, to understand what's going on there. And then the piece that's really, really important is when you do actually visit the office, I'm assuming you do, I mean, most people who work remotely at some point visit the location, that is your time. That is your time. Like, if you're sitting at a desk working on technical stuff when you're visiting the office that you're remotely in, you're in trouble. So that is the time where you take people out to coffee. That is the time where you invest heavily in one-on-one relationships. If you can, even organize dinner and drinks. I mean, I do this and I come back and I'm exhausted, but it was so worthwhile because I understood what was happening in that office. So my thing is make the time on both ends. It's hard work. It is. I don't know if you have anything to add, any remote working?
Yeah.
No? That's good.
Yeah, I can go next. So how to deal with the barrier of being called new in workplace, even though I have total 10 years of experience in my industry, and it's already been 1 year of working in my current company, and I'm a really social person. It's not like nobody knows me, but still my team calls me like a new person. I don't know how to break this barrier.
Well, one thing I would start with is I actually think new is good. So maybe think about how you're receiving it. Because new means fresh. New means helping to contribute to something new and transformation. New, in my mind, is positive. But I have had a recent encounter where I think new was negatively perceived by somebody in my organization. And my encouragement, if it's consistently coming from a few people, just have a private conversation with that person. Again, have courage to just directly say, hey, you probably didn't occur to you, but it kind of hurts my feelings, or it kind of bothers me when you use that word. I feel like it disrespects my tenure and my experience. And generally, that's very well received if it's not done in a public setting where you've made that person feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Just privately approach them. Share why it makes you upset, and it's generally a very easy solution.
But is there any actions I should be doing? Like,
So let me, and we can have this conversation offline, but I think part of this is also to understand the context of, context in which new is being applied, right? Because in some companies, frankly, if you haven't been here 42 years, you will be new, right? That's just the deal. It doesn't really matter. And so, so if that's the case, then it really means nothing, right? If that happens to be the underlying corporate culture, if it turns out that you and six other people have been there for a year, but you're the only one getting the title, then that has a different meaning. Mm-hmm. So I'd say you got to kind of examine sort of the context in which it's being used and then decide how you leverage it. To your point, it's not all bad. Sometimes it is, sure I am, and so therefore, let me ask you another question, right? That changes the conversation.
Thank you. So judging from all the people in line, we could do this all day. Unfortunately, we don't have all day to do it, so we'll take one more question before the close.
How do we handle, like, personal barriers? Like, I mean, we are talking about, like, work barriers, but there are, like, barriers at home or, like, personal barriers that kind of translates into, like, invisible barriers at work. I mean, for example, like, if you're, like, a young mom or something, I mean, your manager doesn't may not give you a benefit of doubt that you can cater all the time he needs. I mean, how do we raise beyond that, you know?
So I would say there's two sides to that question, right? So the first of which is everybody has a home life and a work life. Doesn't matter who you are, what your gender is, right? Everybody's balancing those two things. Part of it is making sure you understand what both need and what you're willing to give both of them. Because the simple truth is, I would say, my own personal opinion is there is no balance. I think balance is a fallacy. I think what there is timing and commitment. So what I said to my kids at one point, which was, I love that you want to tell me about Lucy in seventh grade and why she was mean today. I don't care. And I'm not going to be here to care because right now there's this other thing I have to care about. And on Wednesday, when something really matters, it's going to matter greatly to me and I will stop the world to deal with you in this. Part of it is empowering the people in your life to be dependent in a way that works for you and to be independent in a way that works for you. So my kids to this day who are now adults will tell you they learned very early to say things like, I just want you to hear me tell you this. I don't really want anything from you. So I could listen and multitask and do my email. Or, I mean, I was just very frank. I said, look, sometimes what you need is super important and I need you to tell me when that is and you will get my undivided attention. But when it's just about I need somebody to hear me whine about this thing, I need you to tell me that too, because I'll give you the attention you need for that as well. And the interesting thing is when you do that, now this is how it translates to the workplace. So people who work with me absolutely know that that is the kind of mother I am. My clients all know that I've told all of them, there are six things that I do every single year and under no circumstance will I not do them. Every other day you can have. And so when I come in and they say, China, we really want to have this meeting on Tuesday, I go, it's one of my six. And I don't have to say another word because they will say to me, oh, yeah. Okay, no worries. We'll figure out a different way to do it. Or you can do it remotely or whatever it is. So part of it's about being open in the communication, right? And setting expectations on both sides of that coin so that people aren't disappointed. Because then you aren't pulled in this crazy direction, right, and feeling insane because everybody wants 100% and it doesn't work like that.
Well, this has been extraordinary. Really appreciate everything that you've shared.